Folks, you're listening to
Stinkler!
Guys, welcome to the inaugural podcast of Stickwork. We have two guests on the show that you're definitely going to enjoy. From DownGoesBrown.com, we have Sean, and MLHS's own Garrett Bauman is going to be stopping by and talking to us as well. So, Gus, are you ready to get this show on the
road? You know what, Fab? I think I am.
Well, guys, it's time to kick it off with a little bit of spice. What's up, ladies and G's? We're finally here at Stickwork with Fab and Cats, the inaugural show. Thank you so much for your patience. Thank you to Alec Brownscombe for giving us the opportunity and being able to use MLHS as a platform for the podcast. I'll give you a little bit of a background here. Myself, I have a hard-assed approach. I don't take crap from anybody, and I'm going to dish it out as well as I can take it. Now, Gus, a little bit about you. Well, I mean, a lot of people know who you are from your writings with McKean's and from MLHS. But just give everybody more, a little bit of a background, if you will, and just elaborate on all that stuff that you're doing right now.
Well, what I basically do is I cover fantasy for McKean's, but that also includes doing scouting and amateur scouting. I go to a whole bunch of different games, AHL, OHL. I don't attend as many Leaf games as people probably think I do, and I don't. But that's... you can watch all these games on TV. I do end up watching a lot of games. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much where I'm coming from. I'm giving you the look from a general perspective throughout the league.
Right. So with you having as much exposure, especially to the Western Conference, a lot of people don't have that exposure. At least you have the upper hand on a lot of people. And you know what? We're going to rely a lot on you for your knowledge here.
Well, we're going to take it as we
exactly. Take it. Remember, as I don't have a hockey package here. You do.
Yeah.
So you can watch 13 or 14 hockey games on a Saturday night where I'm stuck watching it on CBC or TSN or Sportsnet when they actually carry a hockey game. So you know what? I'm going to be feeding off you and everybody else is going to be feeding off you as well. So you got to be ready for that. Okay, so we're going to move on a little bit here. You know what? We've just given you guys a brief outline and some information about us. We're going to move on to about the Leafs here. The Leafs have started off really slow. Here they are, 7 games in. They're 0-7. Gus,
well,
I'm going to throw it over to you.
0-6-1.
Sorry, 0-6-1. My apologies. They did get the 1 point, but it was still in a losing cause nonetheless.
But now, on that note, Fab, those points, they're very important. Even those little extra points. I have a feeling that the Leafs are going to end up really relying on those overtime points, extra time, regardless of whether they win the game with that extra point or not. Relying on those overtime points is what is going to take them into the playoffs.
And it's funny, Ray Ferraro had written a blog on TSN's website talking about the importance of those shootout points. At first, it was a bit of a sideshow trying to create some sort of attraction to the, you know, for the newer fans and stuff like that. And now you look at it, it's got some major importance and major implications to the standings. A lot of teams will end up having their seasons made or broken by the shootout. So yeah, it is very important. Now, getting back to what we were originally discussing here, okay, yeah, that shootout point could be important, but there are so many other factors that are the catalysts behind the Leafs being 0-6-1, as you put it, instead of 0-7. In my opinion, a loss is a loss, but you know what? We're not even going to get into that right now.
Right.
You know what? We're getting sidetracked, okay? So, Gus, why do you think they've started slow?
I think a lot of this does stem from the recent additions. I also think that there's a bit of a... I think that the expectation level is also has a lot to do with this.
Right.
I think that it put a general pressure over the entire organization and across the fandom as well. Because there was that general rumbling when the Leafs started making their moves in the summer and they started signing the Komisariks and the Boschemans, and people had this preconceived notion in their minds that they were moving in a specific direction.
Right.
In this short term, just trying to feel each other out, trying to become part of a working unit, it takes time.
Exactly.
And as you've seen, and as many people have seen, I think that there are some key elements that are missing. And obviously, goaltending seems to be that major element.
Yep.
And I wish the Leafs would make that one decision. If they're going to stick with Toskala, then he's the guy.
Right.
If they're going to go into the Gustafsson era, then get it over and done with.
Exactly.
And move on.
And you know what? And it may be time to do something like that, considering that Vesa Toskala's save percentage is 810. In fact, none of the three goaltenders that have played for the Leafs right now have a save percentage anywhere near 900. Okay, with the exception of Gustafsson, his goals against, or sorry, his save percentage is 8.94.
Yeah, but that's
But that is in spotted duty, and you know what? He didn't get that. He didn't see that much rubber against the Ottawa in the first place. So yeah, you know what? The goaltending is definitely an issue. I mean, there are other issues as well that the Leafs have to deal with. For one, they have the 30th ranked defense. They're allowing 4.57 goals per game. Okay, their offense, which was their bread and butter last year, that ranked 9th, is 29th this year, only scoring 2 goals a game. Okay, special teams has been an absolute killer for them. With the exception of the power play, it's in the middle of the pack, ranked 16th. But you have the 30th ranked PK. They're barely killing over 60%. That means that any team on that power play, and I'm not a math major, but I can tell you, if you're going to allow a goal out of every 6-7 opportunities, that's pretty damn bad. There's a problem there. Got to address that issue. Okay?
I think that in the end, what we're going to end up doing is discussing a lot of these issues with some of the guests that we end up bringing on the show,
yes,
just
indeed.
So we can give our listeners something
exactly.
to look forward to.
A different perspective as well.
Of course.
You know, which is most important. I mean, it's not only going to be just us just spewing off about what we know and what we've observed. You're also going to get, you know, another point of view as well, which is definitely going to make things a little more interesting.
Yeah,
we're going to spice
it up
a little bit, right?
That's it.
We're going to be like Emerald in the Kitchen. Bam! You know, kind of thing, right?
For our inaugural show, we also have some interesting guests coming up.
Yes, indeed. From Pension Plan Puppets, we have Julian Sanchez. And we also have from MLHS, Garrett Bauman. He's going to be stopping by, and he's going to be chatting with us about all the Leafs' goings-on, if you want to call it that.
I'm sure we'll hit most of the subjects that you were talking about with the defense.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there are some bright spots, though. Let's keep this in mind, okay? The Leafs do rank in the top 10 in shots on goal.
Do they really?
Okay? They are 9th, averaging 31 shots per game. Now, I know what you're going to ask, because I'm a mind reader. I'm the great Karnak, okay? Like, anybody who knows Johnny Carson knows a great Karnak, that's me, okay? You're going to ask, how many of those shots are quality opportunities, right?
That was, yeah.
I'm going to be very honest with you. I have no idea how many of them are quality opportunities. I'm just pointing out what I see here, what I've observed. 31 shots per game. Not bad in shots allowed. 29 shots per game, ranking 12th in the National Hockey League. But you know what? This is where the problem is going to lie. It's going to rely on, or it's going to be hinged upon certain individuals who are not doing their thing. Okay? And I know this is a point that we're going to definitely argue at some point. I can guarantee it. Okay? Jason Blake. I don't know how the hell this guy has not been benched yet. 2 points in 7 games is a minus 7, and he's still playing. Nick Hagman has 4 points, is even, and he's riding the pines? That doesn't make any sense to me. But you know what? I'm not Ron Wilson. I'm not Brian Burke. I'm not going to make that decision. There must have been some underlying factor as to why they made that decision. But from a casual observer standpoint, how many people understand that, really?
I think that's a tough one to dispute, though, because you're right. He hasn't really done anything except for he seemed to be a little bit better. You see, with Jason Blake, I've always thought that he really needs to be more, it's going to sound bad, he has to be selfish to be successful. And by saying that, I mean that he has to be the guy that's doing whatever it is to create that goal.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So he's similar to like an Alex Kovalev, for example.
Yeah, he really needs to have control of the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing with Blake is he's got two assets. He's very fast, and he's got a wicked shot.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from those two assets, he's not as his vision isn't as good as other players. He doesn't use his wingers as well as other players do. So I think that little bit of selfishness creates this illusion that he doesn't do enough. And he's trying to do too much on his own. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it looks like he's just wasting opportunity after opportunity after opportunity.
Now, if he were to be more selfish and he wanted to be the man, he could also play in his own zone too and be a little more defensive-minded too and help out.
Well, maybe that's the reason why he should be benched.
He's a minus seven.
Yeah, but you know, when the Leafs were looking for people to take shots on goal, Jason Blake is one of those guys.
He'll gladly take the shots on net, but you know what? The problem was he was taking 200-some-odd shots on net, but he wasn't creating any scoring opportunities.
Yeah. Well, let's address this issue in our next segment, and okay. I'm sure we can come up to some kind of consensus. But automatically, just from what I'm hearing from you, Fab, you're saying that Blake shouldn't even be in the lineup.
He shouldn't be in the lineup. He should be sitting.
So on a team that's kind of thin on skill up front in the first place, you also want to take away a possible top six forward.
Yes, I do. Okay, you know what? You have to find a way to motivate your players. If Stajan is a possible top six forward, he sat. Hagman is a top six forward. He sat as well. They both sat the same night.
Yeah.
Jason Blake needs to sit at least one or two games. Look at what happened last year. He sat one or two games. It lit a fire in his ass, and he was the best Leaf for the second half of the year. What's to say it can't happen again? You know what, guys? We've been beating this like a dead horse. We're going to move on here, okay?
We'll take it over in the next segment. How's that?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Cavi, and you're tuned in to Stickwork on MapleLeafHotStove.com.
And we're back, and Fab, we're getting ready to go on the road for five games with the Leafs, aren't we?
Yes, we're starting off in Vancouver, making our way down south to good old California and Anaheim. Beautiful city. I've been there, by the way. Then back over to the Midwest in Dallas, and then back to the Eastern Conference in Buffalo and Montreal. That's going to be pretty interesting because this road swing is going to span three time zones.
Yeah, exactly. But it's funny that I think that Vancouver right now is one of those struggling teams, and it's pretty obvious with Luongo a little bit. They also have injury issues with Sedin and Semi Salo and all of that. So
yeah, don't remind me. I got Daniel Sedin in my hockey pool. Well, came back to cost me.
I'm sure that there's a lot of people that are
in a 7-1 game. I can't figure that one out.
Well, I'm sure that there's a lot of people that feel your.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people share my pain. Thank you to all those who share my pain for taking Daniel Sedin.
But Vancouver doesn't look to be the dominant Stanley Cup contender that they probably could have been considered prior to the season.
Yeah, you know what?
They're
starting off really slow out of the gate as well. They're 3-4. Take a look at their offense, for example. They're ranked 18th in the league. Defense, not much better, 20th. And then if their special teams is middle of the pack as well, with a penalty kill ranked 20th, and their power plays ranked 11th, which isn't bad. But you know what? Like you said, you have a struggling Luongo, a defense that hasn't really been able to gel together with all the acquisitions they've made. You know, losing Matthias Olin was probably bigger than they thought it would be.
And it was one of the things that, well, yeah, I'm not as convinced that losing Olin is as big an issue, but I do believe that up front, losing Daniel Sedin, I think, was one of the bigger problems. And I'll explain a little bit more in depth, and that's because I don't think that Alex Burrows is a 30-goal scorer. I think he got 28 last year, and that's great, and he really got took the league by storm, but he's not going to be that dynamic scoring machine. So right now they have Ryan Kesler that's doing the scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Henrik has some kind of a scoring touch, but he's the setup guy.
Yep, exactly.
So it's hard. Michael Samuelson is another trigger man that I think really should benefit from Daniel's absence. However, they also play on the opposite wing.
Right.
So there's a little bit of a disconnect over there.
Mm-hmm. And I think even with Vancouver not.
So where are we going with all of this? Let me get
to you
the
over. That's a very good question.
Okay, where are we going with all of this?
We're going off on a tangent. Right? That's where we're going with this. Okay.
The Leafs are looking to break this goose egg. That nothing is going to change until they get that first win. And is the possibility going to be against Vancouver? Is it going to be against Anaheim? Or is it going to be against Dallas? Are they going to come back from the West Coast with a win?
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one. You know what? But then again, any game can be won. It's not as if the Leafs are going on this West Coast road swing knowing that they're going to lose all three games. They're not going to go in with that mindset and say, oh, crap, here we go. We got to face Vancouver and Anaheim and Dallas. We're screwed. We're completely out of, we're shit out of luck, really, if we face these three teams. Guaranteed these are losses. you know what? They've gone on the road in the past and they've had a little bit of success. Mind you, lately they haven't. But this road swing could very well be the best thing possible for the Leafs right now, because they're getting away from home. They don't have to deal with the media pressure. And Ron Wilson and Brian Burke don't have to deal with the constant questions about the direction of the team and if somebody's going to lose their job. They don't have to worry about that for those five games.
Maybe not as much for Vancouver, but I agree. Maybe down,
maybe down when they travel back to Buffalo or Montreal. Maybe, yes, because you're back in an Eastern time zone. But you're not going to see a big conglomerate of media guys flocking to Vancouver or flocking to Anaheim.
You know, I think that it actually would be the opposite. I think that Vancouver, just being a Canadian city, is going to, and being a Leafs, there's got to be a lot of support from the West Coast with the Leafs in Vancouver. I think that they draw the media's attention. But this is also the first time that Brian Burke has taken his new revamped team into Anaheim. Exactly. So there's going to be a lot of questions, and now all of a sudden, and especially if they lose against Vancouver, that this can slowly become a gong show from the inside out.
It could very well be the case. Now wouldn't this be funny? I mean, this is just throwing irony out there. Justin Pogge just got called up by the Anaheim Ducks. Would it not be funny if he went in net on Monday night against the Leafs, pitches a shutout for a W?
Well,
oh man, that would burn a hole in so many people's asses. It wouldn't be funny.
Well, it's the reason that Justin Pogge was recalled from the Bakersfield Condors, so the ECHL, the East Coast Hockey League, because people have to remember this. It's because Anaheim does not have a farm club. They don't have an affiliation with an AHL team this year, so they could have players playing for other AHL clubs as long as they gain permission. So anyway, Pogge was playing for Bakersfield, and since Jaguar went down with an injury in practice as a precaution, they brought up Justin Pogge,
and he'll be the backup for the next few games.
I think it provides a really nice sense of drama, however, don't you?
Yes, it does, actually. There's that element of intrigue if he were to play, for example.
And let's get into my next point, because I think this is going to be my biggest obstacles, I think, to the Leafs making a playoff run, let alone making the playoffs. But let's get to that right after this.
Okay. Hey guys, welcome back to Stick Work, Fab and Cats. We're going to switch gears here. We're going to talk about the teams that are on the bubble. Now, you've brought up six teams in particular that you believe are on the bubble, and we're going to go into detail and talk about those teams. Let's start with the Buffalo Sabres.
Okay. Well, let's just make sure that we understand why we're talking about bubble teams, because I think that even before this losing streak, and some of you that may have read some of my blogs over the recent term know that I believe there are a few teams that are on the bubble of making the playoff spot. By that I mean there's going to be two spots at the bottom end that are going to have four or five teams, maybe even as much as six, all fighting out for that one playoff spot. Now, towards the end of the race, teams will fall off and whatever, whatever. I think that the Leafs are part of that contingent of bubble teams. So absolutely anything can happen.
Right.
They could have finished with a playoff spot or just outside of the playoffs.
Okay, but do you think that the Leafs' slow start could hinder their
chances? It does. It does. It totally does. Now, here's the thing, though. If you're going to make the playoffs, what you have to do is take away the points that you are going to allow when you play the Buffaloes, the Montreals, the Floridas, the Atlantas, the Jerseys, the Carolinas. You can maybe even throw Tampa Bay in there. Heck, if Marian Gaborik goes down and something crazy happens, the Rangers might be a Marian Gaborik injury away from making the playoffs as well. Mm-hmm.
And let's also take this into consideration with the Rangers last year. They started out the same way, and then they barely squeaked into the playoffs, so anything could happen.
I like that, though, but I like the Rangers because they've changed the makeup of their team. It's not the same team that they went into the season last season. They can score now. There's a lot of firepower back there.
And Drury's playing.
But this isn't for they're not part of that bubble group.
Yes.
But anything can happen. I mean, just look at what's happened recently. Mm-hmm. Montreal would have been in a much better position had Markov not been there. Now, they may not even be part of that bubble. Mm-hmm. You know, they recently broke a recent skid, too. I believe it was a five-game
losing skid.
You know?
And it was against one of those bubble teams that we discussed.
Exactly.
Coincidentally.
Anything can happen. And one big injury can definitely make a team's chances of making the playoffs a lot narrower. Mm-hmm. So now you got teams like Buffalo that had the Vanek injury. That could have been a big problem. Montreal, we've already talked about. Florida's been pretty healthy so far. Atlanta's rejuvenated, and mm-hmm. they look to be quite real. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them squeaking in.
Yes, they definitely got a lot of balance up front with their top two lines. A lot of these young kids have really stepped it up and have really shown that they can play at a high level. Kids like Ryan Little, Rich Peverley, who, you know what, we've both been pretty high on Peverley.
I was surprised
that he was picked up for pretty much next to nothing.
Yeah,
and that Nashville just let him go that easily.
Well, and then that he signed recently for a two-year, $2.6 million contract.
Exactly.
That's great value. For your second-line center, that's just great value.
That's pretty damn good, exactly.
So, now, you have guys... see, this is another thing, too, about these bubble teams. And it's something that I wish Leaf Nation would consider a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You watch some of these other teams, and they're not playing as well as you think they're playing.
Right.
And we've talked about Vancouver already.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey's not playing up to speed. There's mm-hmm. some injury concerns there.
Sure.
Brodeur has issues as well. There's a lot of teams that aren't playing well, but because everybody's expecting this big, huge push from Toronto, the world is about to fall through.
Yes, exactly. The apocalypse has arrived, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, and
Nostradamus is right. The world is ending in the year 2009 rather than 2000 in this case.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that when it comes down to it, as long as Toronto plays well against these bubble teams, as long as they compete and perhaps steal a few overtime points from, mm-hmm. you know, teams above them and teams from the other conference if they can't outright win those games.
Right. Okay, so you know what? Let's quickly break down the bubble teams and why you believe that these six teams are bubble teams.
Okay.
So, Buffalo, what makes them a bubble team?
I think that they have great goaltending in Ryan Miller. I think that they're very talented up front, but kind of thin, and they don't always show up game to game.
Okay. Montreal, why are they a bubble team?
I think Montreal has a very thin defense. They're pretty much one, maybe two lines of scoring. They're kind of smallish up front, which over the long haul, they may look great game to game, but it takes its toll.
Mm-hmm. The Panthers.
I kind of think that the Panthers, they're not bad. I don't think that there's a cohesiveness there enough to generate a playoff drive. I believe that there's enough to keep them in there, but not enough to take them over the hump. I don't think that Steven Weiss and Nathan Horton are the duo to take them right in. I think that Vokoun's been shaky and Clemenson isn't the answer, although he's been good, and their defense has taken a hit with Jay Bouwmeester. They can be competitive and they could be good night to night, but are they good enough to make the playoffs?
Florida could also be taking another hit if there's a rumor deal that I was reading a blog on MLHS. I believe it was from Alex Tran, and he was talking about the possibility of Nathan Horton coming to Toronto.
I'd shoot that down right off the bat.
Yeah.
There's no way that the Leafs have the assets to make that kind of a deal. And for what reason would Nathan Horton? That's going to be another segment at another time. Let's just get through this one first.
Okay. The Atlanta Thrashers we've discussed, but you know what? Let's go into them.
Okay.
Okay.
I like Atlanta. I think that Atlanta did a couple of very good things. They strengthened a little bit of their depth by adding, you know, Toronto product Nick Antropov. Bottom line is he can score you 20 to 25 goals. He provides a physical presence down low, something that can give Kovalchuk a little bit more space. And this is a thing that we've butt heads on this, but he does that, though. He creates better space. I think that Zach Bogosian is going to be a beast. He's already doing these little subtle things that, you know, veteran defensemen do, and this is the second year in the NHL for him. They strengthened their blue line with Pavel Kobina. The only question mark, which I think is actually a bonus, is that Kari Lehtinen has already missed enough time with a back problem.
Mm-hmm.
it's given that youngster Andrei Pavlich's opportunity to come out, and, you know, he's probably better than any other goalie in that organization.
Yeah, this kid can very well be the franchise goalie that the Atlanta Thrashers have been waiting for.
That's correct.
And Johan Hedberg really isn't a bad backup either. He's very serviceable. He's done his job over the course of his career.
Well, right now he's taken over that number one role, though, because of Kari Lehtinen's injury. But I think that Pavlich will eventually...
Well, it's a shame that Kari Lehtinen has had all these injury issues. You know what? This kid had the making of a good goaltender. Probably a top-notch goaltender in the National Hockey League, but he's never been able to stay healthy.
And he could be, but exactly that. It's exactly that, Fab. It's the element of just not being able to stay healthy throughout the entire season. I mean, to have something, and they're big injuries too. It's not like, you know, something a couple of days. There's time that he's missed.
Months, weeks at a time.
It's tough. It's tough to really compete with that. So now, these bubble teams that we were talking about, and let's get to New Jersey after this, is you see a little bit of spotty, inconsistent play from Martin Brodeur. He's getting a little older.
He's a little bit long in the tooth now. He's 36.
He's going to be one of those goalies that, I mean, how much are you going to play him down the stretch after the with a big stretch of games right after the Olympic break, and especially if he ends up playing in the Olympics? It's a lot for that goalie to take, you know? It takes its time. Exactly. So I also think that Jersey's a little thin defensively. They're not the greatest, but I like their top six up front. So I think that they're a Martin Brodeur injury. There's no Clemenson this year. If anything happens to Brodeur, I think that they're
done.
They're done.
They don't have a shot in hell.
And Carolina, I think, is one of those teams.
I'm surprised that you mentioned Carolina. This is a team that went to the conference finals last year. And having them on the bubble doesn't seem to make any sense to me, but I want you to shed some light on that.
Well, I think that a lot of factors. They hit lightning in a bottle, Carolina, last year. They really, really went through a stretch where they just kept scoring and they kept winning. And Cam Ward played unbelievably. He played to the point where he could have easily been the third goaltender for Team Canada, if not the outright
number one.
He played that well. But there's just something missing in Carolina that doesn't really jive. Aside from Eric Staal, their scoring isn't there. That they just don't seem to me to have what it takes to maintain the pace that they had last year.
Yeah, and they're one of the oldest teams in the league too. Let's not forget that Brendan Moore is over 40. He's your captain.
Yeah,
Ray Whitney's in his late 30s as well.
Yeah, there are other issues there too. I just don't believe that Carolina is the team that went to the conference final. Okay. I think that they're exactly what you're seeing right now. They're going to be inconsistent. They're going to win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game, and they'll stay in contention up until the end.
Okay. Well, you know what? We've touched upon this issue long enough. It's time for us to move on. Guys, hang tight. We'll be right back after this.